All right, let's dive into this. Fraser Island, Kigari, World Heritage Site, the whole nine yards, rainforests on sand dunes, those crazy freshwater lakes. I mean, it's got it all,
It
right?
does. It really does.
But we got a stack of reports and newsletters from FIDO,
Well, yeah.
Fraser Island Defenders Organization. And they're saying this paradise is facing some pretty serious pressure.
It's a fascinating case study. Kigari, it has this incredible allure, this beauty, right?
Right.
But underneath it all, it's surprisingly fragile.
Yeah, and the sources really they really hit on that. It's like imagine if you built like, if you built a house on sand,
Yeah.
you'd want a solid plan.
Right.
I'm
That's Fraser Island, the whole thing, made entirely of sand.
Yeah.
So as you can imagine, pretty vulnerable to erosion.
Exactly.
And well, us, just our
The sh
impact.
and the sheer volume of visitors is it's staggering. We're not talking about a few nature enthusiasts here and there.
Right.
FIDO's research shows that Fraser Island sees something like 873,000 visitor days every single year.
Wow. Most folks stay for an average of 3.3 days.
So it's not just a quick stop. They're really, they're going deep,
They are.
immersing
They're
themselves.
immersing themselves in the experience.
Yeah.
And who can blame them? I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah, it's an incredible place.
It is.
But all that love, it comes at a cost.
Yes. The economic benefit is significant. We're talking around $265 million annually, but the budget for managing the island, it's nowhere near that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, hovering around $4 to $5 million.
That's a huge discrepancy.
It is.
It's almost like we're loving the island to death,
That's one way to put it.
showering it with attention, tourism dollars,
Yeah.
but not really giving back, giving it the support it needs
That's a really apt way to put it.
to actually cope.
It really is. And it raises a critical question. How long can this go on, this delicate balance or imbalance, I guess?
Right. I mean, to really understand the stakes here, we need to understand why Fraser Island is so vulnerable in the first place. Yes.
You mentioned that sand foundation.
Yeah.
What makes it so susceptible to all this pressure?
It all comes down to the dune systems. The dune systems are really unique. You can almost picture them like layers of a cake, each one formed over millennia.
Oh, wow.
So you have the
Yeah.
young dunes, they're barely stabilized. You see these tough plants. Oh gosh,
Yeah.
varinas,
Oh, yeah.
they're just clinging to the shifting sand.
Right.
Then as you move through the layers, the soil, it gets deeper, but it's also nutrient poor. So
Yeah.
you end up with these stunted trees and these incredibly diverse
So
heathlands.
it's not just sand, it's this whole system that's
Exactly.
taken ages to develop. I mean,
Absolutely.
all those 4WD vehicles, all that churning up the sand, that can't be helping.
You're absolutely right. That constant disturbance from the vehicles, it just exacerbates the natural erosion processes.
Yeah.
And the impact isn't limited to just the sand. It affects vegetation, fauna, even those wilderness values.
Now.
That's what draws visitors in. Do the reports give specific examples of
Yeah.
this damage? I mean, I'm having trouble picturing just how much these vehicles are actually changing the landscape.
Oh, there are some stark examples. Yidney Lake, for instance.
Yeah.
Yidney Lake used to be a beautiful lake, but now it's filled with a young forest.
What?
All the sand moved by road erosion has basically filled it in.
A lake turned into a
That's
forest.
exactly what's happened.
That's a pretty drastic change. It
Yeah.
really shows the power of erosion,
It does.
especially when you add, human activity into the mix.
Especially when you add human
All
activity.
right.
And then there's Wengulba Creek.
Okay.
You have this incredibly pristine creek.
Okay.
It flows through this lush rainforest.
Yeah.
But the vibrations from the vehicles on the nearby road are making the trees unstable,
Oh, wow.
putting this iconic creek at risk.
So we build these roads to access these amazing places, but then by doing so, we threaten them.
It's a tough balancing act.
Yeah. It's like this cruel irony. But before we get too deep into the current challenges, I think it's important to understand how we got here.
Yeah.
I mean, Fraser Island's history with humans, it hasn't exactly been peaceful coexistence, has it?
You're right. The island's history, it's marked by conflict
Well,
over its resources. It's this constant struggle between exploitation and conservation.
yeah.
And that tension is very much alive today.
So what industries have really left their mark? What should we be looking at to understand the historical context?
Well, logging for one,
Okay.
from the mid-1800s all the way to 1991, Fraser Island's forests were heavily logged,
Yeah.
particularly those valuable satnay and blackbutt trees.
Yeah.
And then there's the sand mining saga,
Right.
which was incredibly contentious.
Yeah.
Incredibly contentious. They actually started mining without even doing an environmental impact assessment.
Yeah, the Fido stuff, they really go into that. It's
Yeah.
crazy they were allowed to do that.
It's true. Back in 74, this company, DM Minerals, they got a license to export mineral sands from the island. And get this, they weren't required to do an environmental impact assessment beforehand.
It's hard to believe that was ever allowed. So what happened? Did they just start digging?
They did. For almost 2 years, they extracted sand at a rate of over 2 hectares every week.
Oh, wow.
It sparked this massive public outcry. Conservationists, they were furious. But the mining continued, despite all the pleas to conduct an assessment.
That's a lot of damage in a very short amount of time. Sounds like a real David and Goliath situation.
It really was. But eventually, all that pressure, the public outcry, the scientific concerns, it led to the first ever environmental inquiry under the Environmental Protection Act.
Wow.
And the inquiry's findings were clear.
Yeah.
Fraser Island's environment, it's incredibly significant, complex, and fragile. They stress the need to preserve that wilderness character
Right.
and recognize just how interconnected the ecosystems are.
That's amazing. It
Yeah.
really shows how powerful, public pressure can be when it comes to protecting these special
It
places.
really does.
But even with all this attention on conservation, I imagine there are still some ongoing threats
Oh, absolutely.
to Fraser Island's future.
Absolutely.
What are the biggest challenges facing the island today?
Well, even though it is an island, Fraser Island is surprisingly vulnerable to invasive species.
Wait, hold on. I thought being surrounded by water was like that was the island's best defense
You'd think so, right?
against those
You
invaders.
would think so.
Yeah.
And in some ways, it is. The dingo population actually does a remarkable job of keeping feral animals like foxes and rabbits in check,
Okay.
but other invaders have managed to slip through.
So, who are the biggest troublemakers in this case?
Cane toads, unfortunately, are a major problem.
Oh, yeah.
They've devastated native frog-eating animals, pushing species like quolls towards extinction. And then there are the weeds. Lantana, B2 bush, and succulents are all thriving in those disturbed areas, especially around the more developed parts of the island.
So it's this constant battle against these invaders, both big and small. I mean, it sounds like managing them would be a full-time job.
Oh, absolutely. And as if that wasn't enough, you have the looming threat of climate change.
Right, climate change. It's the elephant or maybe the cane toad in the room. How's that going to impact a fragile sand island? I mean, I can imagine rising sea levels would be a problem, but what else? What else should we be concerned about?
It's a complex issue with far-reaching effects. Rising sea levels, yeah, they're definitely a concern, especially for those unique pattern fens that we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
But you also have the potential for increased droughts, wildfires, changes in rainfall patterns, and even the displacement of species.
So climate change is like it's a threat multiplier. It takes all the existing pressures on the island and just like amplifies them.
Exactly. It's this intricate web of interconnected challenges. Finding sustainable solutions is absolutely crucial.
Well, that brings us to the million-dollar question. What can be done? What solutions are on the table? What are the challenges in actually putting them into practice?
There are a lot of ideas being floated, some more controversial than others. Fido has been advocating for two contrasting approaches that I think are worth exploring.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Lay them on us. What are these contracting approaches?
One idea is a light rail system,
Okay.
essentially a people mover, to drastically reduce the number of vehicles on the island.
Interesting.
Fido has been pushing this for years. They've even gone so far as to commission feasibility studies.
Oh, wow.
The potential benefits are pretty clear. Less erosion, less noise and air pollution, and a more controlled visitor experience overall.
Yeah, that sounds promising. What are the hurdles?
The biggest obstacle is a lack of government commitment. Even with the studies and the obvious benefits, they haven't been willing to fund the project. It's seen as too expensive and potentially disruptive to the existing tourism industry, which, as we know, brings in a lot of money.
So it's a classic battle between economic interests and ecological concerns. What about the other approach you mentioned?
This one delves into the island's ancient past, taking inspiration from the traditional practices of the Pechula people. It's the concept of ecological burning.
I've heard of controlled burns, but how is ecological burning different? Is it just a fancy way of saying the same thing?
Not quite. It's about mimicking those traditional Aboriginal fire regimes, which involve, you know, regular low-intensity burns. These burns, they were used to manage fuel loads and to promote biodiversity.
So it's about working with fire, recognizing its role as a natural force, rather than just trying to suppress it all the time.
Exactly. And the changes we've seen since the cessation of regular burning on Fraser Island, they're pretty striking.
Like what?
The vegetation's become denser, fuel loads have increased, and some species have really struggled to adapt. Done properly, ecological burning could be a really powerful tool for restoring balance to the island's ecosystems.
But I imagine there are some challenges to implementing something like that.
Of course.
I mean, are there concerns about safety or the impact on tourism?
Of course. Those are all valid concerns.
Mm-hmm.
It would require careful planning, community engagement, and really a shift in mindset. We need to move away from viewing fire as solely a destructive force and recognize its potential as a beneficial tool for land management.
So we have two very different approaches here. One high-tech, the other rooted in this ancient wisdom.
That's right.
But both are aimed at addressing the same fundamental issue, reducing our impact on a fragile ecosystem. And it seems like both face some pretty significant challenges in getting off the ground.
That's true. Finding a truly sustainable path forward for Kigari is going to require a lot of collaboration, innovation, and a willingness to challenge the status quo. It's not going to be easy. But the stakes are high. What resonates with you as the most pressing issue facing the island?
That's a tough one because, I mean, as you said, it's all interconnected. But I think what strikes me most is this lack of long-term vision. You know, we seem so focused on the immediate gains. How many tourists can we cram in? How much money can we make? We're losing sight of the bigger picture.
And that bigger picture is the long-term health and resilience of this incredible ecosystem, an ecosystem that has supported the Pechula people for millennia and continues to inspire awe in all who visit. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to ask ourselves, what kind of legacy do we want to leave on this island paradise?
Makes you wonder, like Fido asks in these reports, like what does wilderness even mean in a place as popular as Fraser Island?
It is a question worth pondering. Can you truly experience untouched nature in a place that sees hundreds of thousands of visitors every year?
It's like there are two Fraser Islands. The one we imagine, this pristine paradise, and then the reality, a place grappling with these very real impacts, human activity.
It reminds me of something Judith Wright, the Australian poet, wrote about her visit to Fraser Island back in the 1940s. She talked about encountering only three people during her entire three-day trek.
Wow.
And described these pristine beaches stretching as far as the eye could see.
That's a far cry from what most visitors experience today.
It is. It really is.
It's almost like we're chasing a ghost. This idea of like untouched wilderness, when in reality, we're part of the story now. Our actions are, they're shaping the island's future, whether we realize it or not.
And I think bridging that gap, reconciling the idealized version with the reality, that's crucial.
Yeah.
We need to move away from this idea of being just visitors, you know, just passing through.
Right.
And recognize that we're all part of this ecosystem.
So it's not just about managing those physical impacts. It's also about fostering a sense of responsibility.
Absolutely.
A sense of stewardship among those who visit.
Exactly. It's about understanding that even seemingly small actions, they can have consequences. You know, respecting those fragile dune systems, staying on designated tracks, being mindful of noise levels, these things all contribute to minimizing our footprint.
It's about shifting our mindset from consumption to conservation.
And that shift, it begins with awareness.
Mm.
It starts with understanding the island's history, its vulnerabilities, its interconnectedness. And that's where organizations like Fido play such a vital role. They're not just pointing fingers. They're providing the knowledge, the tools for people to make informed choices.
They're empowering us to become part of the solution, not just, you know, contributors to the problem.
Exactly. And that brings us back to you, our listener. You've now taken this deep dive into the world of Fraser Island, explored its beauty, its fragility, its challenges, and potential solutions. The question is, what will you do with this knowledge?
Will you just file it away as interesting trivia? Or will you let it shape the way you think about your own role in protecting this incredible place?
Because Kigari's future, it depends on people like you. People who are willing to learn, to question, and to act as stewards of this remarkable island.
So we encourage you to, you know, to delve deeper into that Fido material we've discussed. Share what we've learned with others. Maybe even plan a visit to Kigari yourself, armed with this newfound appreciation for its unique values and a commitment to treading lightly on its sandy shores.
That's it for our deep dive into Fraser Island. But remember, the exploration doesn't end here. Keep learning, keep questioning, and keep advocating for the places that matter to you.
Until next time, fellow deep divers.